y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of child abuse, child sexual abuse, grooming, suicide, domestic violence, and abuse. Listener discretion is advised.
On July 20th, 2020, Gallatin, Tennessee 911 dispatchers received a phone call from Aaron Solomon. He told them that his 18-year-old son, Grant, was lying in a ditch at the bottom of the parking lot and that his Toyota Tacoma had backed over him and dragged him down the hill. When responders arrived, they found Grant alive, but only just. He was pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. Officers ruled the death an accident and the case was closed. Grant's mother, Angie Solomon, knows that something else happened in the parking lot that day, something that was the culmination of years of sexual, physical, emotional, and mental abuse, and she's going to do everything she can to prove that Aaron murdered their son.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
All right. So this is part two of what was going to be a one part and turned into a two part. In the case of Grant Solomon.
Well, we can't shut up.
Solomon. Yeah, exactly. We can't shut up. There's just so much to this case. And even after talking about it for 2 hours, you could still talk about it for 10 days. I mean, you know, there's just so much to it. We do want to give a hey girl thanks to Madison for writing it. And Alex for requesting it.
Yes, thank you guys so much.
Thank you. And if you were not here last week or last episode, go back there because this gives you all the
background.
Yes, all the background, things leading up to what happened, and just a lot of information that will be very helpful and add a lot of context. We left off just kind of talking about the abuse that the family specifically Grant and Gracie were suffering, and that they were notifying people, government agencies, schools, church, everybody.
And nobody did one thing about it.
Nobody did even one single solitary thing about it. And a big part of, you know, even when like the DCS stepped in, or I'm sorry, when the investigator stepped in, DCS told them, leave it alone. And they did. So it keeps getting like, it's like dead in the water when we do get anything started. Well, a big part of the reason of that is because Aaron was so well connected. He still is. He went to church with many high-level court members. That's a problem.
Yeah. Conflict of interest much?
Yeah. He went, I believe, I can't remember exactly how he knew this judge, but the judge who like, I think it was the judge who ruled that Angie could no longer file any civil actions against Aaron. He knew her some way personally through church or through something else. I could have the wrong judge in mind because there have been many, but he knew these people personally, some of them, and they're not recusing themselves due to conflict of interest. They're just continuing on.
And it's obviously incredibly biased. Like, Angie just did not even have a prayer, and neither did Grant or Gracie, unfortunately. No. And it's just, yeah, it's disgusting.
Exactly. And one of the people that go to, I think still goes to the church that was affiliated with the school. And at this
Grace
time,
Chapel.
Grace Chapel, and it's Grace Christian Academy is the school. And at this time they were like one entity. I don't know if they've now split or what, but Billy, the governor of Tennessee, goes to that church, or at least did at the time. And Aaron had been attending that church for years. Everyone there had nothing but wonderful things to say about him. And everyone at the school thought the same, despite the allegations that Gracie and Grant had disclosed to mandatory reporters who then did not report that sexual abuse. And I read something with maybe an interview or like maybe even with law enforcement. I can't remember. But an interview with the headmaster of GCA who said that, you know, yeah, we're mandatory reporters and all that kind of stuff. But the things that we were told, they kind of deny that any of these things were communicated to them in this way or whatever. And that, yeah, they're mandatory reporters, but they did not fail in their responsibility to report these things, that they acted in accordance with the way that things should have been done.
I disagree. Wholeheartedly.
Disagree. Yep, disagree. The assumption among everyone was that Angie was just making false claims, filing motions just to get back at Aaron for divorcing her and taking custody of the children.
When in reality, if you look at the amount of things that Aaron did to Angie, you know, like that tracks better than what this is. Like, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. But the
and we've
that
got the
had,
so she's making up that Aaron's restricting their food intake, but Grant did in fact lose 25 pounds. It was noticeable to everybody around him. Mm-hmm. That's what we in the biz call evidence. Okay. Yeah. She's got things that are supporting the allegations that she's making. Gracie has things that are supporting the allegations that she's making. Those bruises on her thighs, you can see them.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, it's so infuriating. Also, I feel like we should say again, just because, I don't know, but a lot of this information is coming from Angie and Gracie. So we don't know many of these things to be fact. So these are alleged according to them. The family was court ordered to attend like family therapy, where Aaron had reportedly promised not to pick Gracie up from school anymore. On August 31st, he did exactly that. And as soon as she saw her father, Gracie ran to the elementary school headmistress's office, crying and texting her mother. And she told the headmistress, Rona Branson, about what her father had been doing to her. She was alleged to be dismissive of the claims, calling in the headmaster, Robbie Mason. Gracie said that Mason looked at her and said, that's old news, Gracie. Now get in the car with your dad.
Who in her life is fighting for her except for Angie? And Angie is powerless mm-hmm. in this situation. So it just breaks my heart. Like,
right. And is like, I know that Aaron had come into a lot of money. So was he like funneling pretty big contributions to the school? Or yeah, like what is it that they are so loyal to him over a child that you're supposed to be protecting? Now, I will say this school, I believe, I mean, it's expensive. It's a private school. So I'm assuming that well-connected families send their kids to this school. And so maybe the school, because of the money that comes in and because some of these people are high-profile families, that it's a thing that they do, that, you know, protect reputations. I don't know that. I'm just wondering because this does not make sense. This child was so terrified. She ran and hid and begged, please don't make me go with him. Nothing.
Nope. And nothing. That to me is evidence all in itself. Like if I don't know if you can make up that kind of fear, if you can act that well as a child, why are we not believing children in the first place? And like you said, with evidence. With evidence.
Yeah, exactly. It's heartbreaking.
Or if you're not going to believe it for fact, which is another point that is really fucking pissing me off, Aaron was believed, just taken for his word.
Yes.
About everything,
including Grant's death, which we're going to get into. Yeah.
Yes. Why are we not giving the same to Gracie and to Angie and to Grant? And mm-hmm. if you don't believe it and you think, well, maybe it's not true, whatever you believe, they believed, can you not at least look into it at the very least? At the very least, look mm-hmm. into it.
Mm-hmm. And that's your job. That's what you're supposed to do. You're there to protect these children and to help them to grow.
Mm-hmm. And for that judge too, the video that Gracie had made about detailing the abuse that she suffered. And the judge was like, I'm not watching that.
She's not going to watch it. Nope.
Nope, not going to watch it.
It's just awful. And, you know, like you said, neither of us are, like, we definitely, you know, agree with believe victims. But we also agree with doing your due diligence. Like, we don't just take anybody's word for everything is just totally fact, but look into it, like you said. And when you do, you see that there is evidence of what they are alleging. Like, mm-hmm. That's
A, your job, and B, the least you can do in this situation.
Exactly, the least you can do. On September 16th, the same judge who'd refused to watch Gracie's video testimony held a new hearing regarding custody. Two of Grant's friends attended, planning to testify for their friend, but the judge would not allow it. Surprisingly, though, the judge agreed to watch the forensic interview that he'd refused at the prior hearing. Partially through, the judge stopped the video and said, I've seen enough. He ruled that the children could stay with Angie, but then, literally, like, 5 minutes later, like once he reviewed this video in his chambers and said, okay, the kids are going to go with Angie, and then comes out into the courtroom and says, never mind, Gracie can go with Angie, but Grant has to stay with Aaron because Grant's a big boy and he can take care of himself. At this point, Grant is 6'2", 6'3", whatever. And like, yeah, he's bigger, but he's still a child.
Yeah.
He's a big boy. He can take care of himself. Well, if he's a big boy, then let him choose where he lives.
Exactly. Yeah. If that's the mentality that we're having, then why won't you just let him be the big boy that he is and decide where he wants to go?
It's just fucking terrible. So shortly after...
I'm sorry, but...
No, go ahead.
None of this makes us look great. You know what I mean? This case is close to home here. Like, we don't live that far.
No.
So it's not, and I hope to God that this, you always hope this somebody, law enforcement, judges, like whoever in the judicial system, whatever, you one time doing this is too much, right? But let's just hope and pray that this is the first and only time, at the very least, that this has ever happened. Now, do I think that that is true? Unfortunately, no. But I'm like, oh gosh, this is terrible. And we're not coming out looking great here. And, you know, it's just, it's so sad.
It is. It's so sad. And how is it that this many people are covering up for one person? Because you hear about, like,
what?
For what? And you hear about, like, cover-ups and stuff, and it's like, well, that doesn't make any sense, because this many people would have to lie or cover up or blah, 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 and it doesn't make sense that this many people would do it. But that's what it seems like is happening.
Well, and, I mean, it's all good, because, like, we've covered Killer Sally recently, and, you know, there are people in that show that have been character witnesses for who I feel was the abuser or the primary abuser in that relationship. And the same thing with Aaron. He's got character witnesses. People said at the church, oh my gosh, he's the best. I've never seen him do anything other than amazing things. He's so awesome. Yeah, well, you're not married to him and you're not his kid. So you can't know that. You're not, you haven't walked a mile in those shoes.
Exactly. You can't know that. And victims of abuse are so damned if you do, damned if you don't, because it's like, well, but you didn't report it to police. Well, you didn't take pictures. Well, you didn't do this. Well, you didn't do that. Well, Angie's got pictures. Angie's got reports. Angie's got all these things. And they're saying, well, it's just not true. You made it up. That's not enough. You
you're
know,
an angry, like, woman.
Yeah.
Angry,
why would you leave woman. It alone? Yeah. You're just scorned and, you know, all this stuff. It's like, what, you know, and we know through research in history that many times this type of abuse is not reported, because it just makes the situation more dangerous and it makes the situation more volatile. We know that. Yep. But we punish people for it still.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It just, I don't know. Shortly after this, both Gracie and Grant left their father's house running away to Angie's, and she couldn't send them back, she said, regardless of what the court said. In another unsurprising move by Grace Christian Academy, Gracie was called in by administrators and instructed to stop talking about her allegations of abuse. And after hearing about this, Grant was fed up. He refused to go back to school unless he could meet with the principal, Rona Branson, the one who'd already ignored Gracie's reports. And it might sound like, okay, so this kid says he's not going to come back to school. Well, if he doesn't come to school, then he's not playing sports for them. And they need him to play sports because he's one of their star players, right? So mm-hmm. they agreed to this meeting and they met with him. It was Rona Branson and three other school officials. And reportedly, the group of administrators simply defended themselves, saying that they were just trying to keep Gracie from creating that bad reputation for herself. Better in the long run. Better in the long run.
Well, and here we go again. This is victim shaming. Like, listen, I mean, I don't know if they said, yes, I'm sure it happened, but shut up about it. Or if they were like, we don't believe it happened, but also quit talking about it. But it's like, well, look how bad this is making you look. Look at mm-hmm. look at what you're doing to yourself. Yeah. Stop.
We don't talk about private stuff at home. Okay. That's yucky. We don't talk about that outside of the home. It just doesn't look good.
Okay, well, guess what? This isn't Bruno. You can talk about it.
I know. And Grant never stopped advocating for himself, his mother, and Gracie right up until his death. And remember, he had just turned 18 at the time of his death. He was legally an adult. And he planned on using this advantage to help him speak for his little sister. Remember, he had always said once he turned 18, he was going to testify against his dad in some of these hearings. And he turns 18 and several weeks later, he's dead.
Ugh. So let's talk about the inconsistencies. And there are many.
Many.
Many, many, many. So, okay, July 20th, 2020, the day of Grant's death. Angie immediately knew that this was no accident. There were so many strange things about Aaron's report of what had happened that day. Despite the inconsistencies and overall weirdness, police quickly ruled Grant's death as an accident, closed the investigation. However, the more Angie continued to look into what happened, the more things she found that clearly pointed to something very different from what Aaron said happened that day. So during the 911 call, and again, if I'm just going to reiterate, if you haven't listened to or watched episode one or part one, this is going to be I really encourage you to go do that because we do play the 911 call in episode one.
Yes. Yeah. And some of this is not going to make sense if you don't have that information.
No. But in the 911 call, he continued to refer to the three men that were helping. Aaron never went down to the ditch to talk to or comfort his son. Talked about it in episode one, too. One witness who saw the scene while the 911 call is in progress said that Aaron was pacing back and forth while on the phone at the top of the lot. Some say that they can hear other voices in the background of the 911 call. I've listened to it. I don't know how you feel. I don't hear anything. Do you hear anything?
There was one time I hear him speaking, right?
Of course,
and he's like, hey, you know, like he's talking to somebody. There was one time that I was like, is that somebody else's voice? But no, I don't hear three men that are you're not hearing responses every time he's calling out, like none of that. No.
I don't know. These three men have never been found, identified, or even proven to have been there. No one saw them but Aaron.
Nobody saw them but Aaron, but we do know that somebody who came out into the parking lot or went into the parking lot or whatever after Grant's already underneath the truck, he didn't see how the truck got there, all these things. He doesn't see these three men either. And the police get there first responders and ambulance and all that get there 4 minutes after that call is initiated, the 911 call. They don't see these men either.
They're gone. Yeah. If they were ever there, they're gone.
And there's been no attempt to locate them.
Yeah, not at all. And also, there's it doesn't seem like there should have been a reason for these three men to have been there in the first place, because that day, according to the facility manager, Tyler Mark, Aaron had specifically requested the facility to remain closed to the public until Grant was done with his practice that day. And this was not a typical protocol, but WPI agreed to honor Aaron's request. So why would there just be these three random people there?
Exactly. Because he made a big deal about, like, in one of the, I don't know if it was an interview with police or who it was, but in one interview or in court or something, he was asked how many people were there that day. And he said, I don't know. I didn't like take a survey or anything, but you knew that nobody was supposed to be there because you specifically requested that. So wouldn't you have been surprised as hell that three men are just in the parking lot with you? Because when you look at everything, the only two cars in that parking lot are theirs initially. Yeah. Like when he says, when they pull in the parking lot, it's just the two of them because it's private. And like he was supposed to have a one-on-one practice anyway. But the facility can remain open during that time. But not today, it wasn't. It was closed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's insane. Like, did these men just slip through a seam in the wall and just appear? Like, I don't...
Right.
Aaron said that Grant had been grabbing his gear out of the bed of his truck when it started to roll backwards. And Angie was like, absolutely not. There is no way he would keep his good baseball equipment in the open bed of the truck.
Absolutely not.
I've never played baseball. I've never even played softball. I've never played pickleball. I know that's not the same. I've never played wiffle ball. But from what I hear, if you are big into sports ball and you have a glove and you've got your bats and, you know, all of this in like a bag or whatever, you're not just going to like leave it out in the elements, right? You're not just going to leave it out because this is in July in Tennessee, hot as hell. It was 90 degrees that day. And that's going to be something that we'll talk about in a little bit too.
Yeah, but baking in the sun.
Baking in the sun. Or what about a random rain shower that happens?
Exactly.
You're just not going to leave your shit out like and that. This you just
is,
won't.
Yeah, this is expensive equipment. Like if you can spend over $100 on a fucking pickleball paddle, I don't know how much you can spend on baseball stuff, but stuff stays in a temperature controlled environment. I'm sure he did not even keep that bag in the garage during the summer or the winter. Yeah. I'm sure he brought that all of that inside because it's temperature controlled. That's very important. Things shrink or things expand in heat, and you know, like All of those things. Yeah. It was not in the bed of his truck. So then he said, oh, well, he was
getting it
to the truck because he's getting it out of the passenger side door. Well, then how did the truck run over him from behind? Like,
there is absolutely no way that that could have even happened. Yes, exactly. The lot where the incident took place was on a bit of a slope, and at the top of the slope was the building. And Aaron said that he and Grant were parked directly in front of the building beside one another. Grant's truck was found in the ditch at the bottom of the slope with the front end pointed down in the ditch and the back end sticking up out of the ditch and onto the sidewalk. And Aaron alleged that the vehicle had rolled down the slope, hitting the ditch so forcefully that it bumped back up and out towards the road. But the thing is, and remember, tons of rocks, right? And they're not boulders, but they are not small pebbles. They are big old rocks. There was hardly any damage on Grant's truck, only a back bumper that had been pulled off. And apparently this was reported by Toyota to be normal, that the Tacoma's bumpers would damage or fall off with like just a little bit of damage to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ditch, this ditch is pretty ditchy. And it was ditchy enough that if the truck bed struck the bottom, it didn't seem to make sense that it would just roll out towards the road. There were no marks on the grass indicating that the tires had rolled over it. There were, however, tire tracks leading from the sidewalk area to the ditch.
If you look at the picture, it looks like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, absolutely fucking not. It looks like somebody took that truck, drove it into the ditch because it's this way. This is the momentum and the motion that it looks like is happening. But if you look at the wheels, the front wheels, they're turned this way, like that. If it rolled straight back,
with nobody in it, by the way.
Nobody in it. Nobody. He had to park it. So, I mean, maybe if he'd done, you know, if he had to turn in that way and left it that way, but then it would have not rolled straight back. The wheels, those tires are turned so far to the side. And what it looks like is that somebody drove it in. I mean, that's what it looks like. Completely.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing coming down. If his body was underneath this truck rolling down the asphalt 60 feet, there'd be blood. He would have had road rash. He would have had little pieces of gravel embedded in his skin. My son took a tumble going around a curve on our sidewalk on his bike or whatever. He just kind of leaned over a little too far, was going a little too fast. Down he went. He scraped his knees up. He was going a mile an hour. You know, I mean, he's a little kid on a bike with training wheels. That's how fast he was going. And he fell, he scraped, he stood up, and he had those, you know, those little bitty bits of rock and like the dirt kind of like embedded in his little knees where he scraped them.
Yep.
Ooh. And Grant has none of that. There's no blood leading down. Nothing.
Nothing. No. The position of Grant's body was an immediate red flag to Angie as well. So if Grant had, in fact, been standing at the back of the truck, like let's say Aaron's first account of it, if he was standing at the back of the truck and it had rolled back and over him, he would have likely been dragged down the slope head first on his back. But Grant was found face up with his head facing the building. So he had somehow, if this is an accurate depiction of what happened, he had done a complete 180 with his body. Because his head should have been facing the other direction.
And flipped. Like, it's just...
Yep. And Grant at the time was approximately 6'3 and 210 pounds. It would have been nearly impossible for his body to reposition itself in that way underneath his truck.
No. He's tall, like, he's taller than the truck. Like, if you see any of these, like, reenactments or drawings or whatever, like if he's standing behind the truck, he's a very tall guy. I'm not saying that a truck could not back over him. Of course it could.
Sure.
But
nothing else indicates that's actually what happened. I mean, we have got enough evidence here to dispute that, I think.
Oh yeah.
When Grant's body was inspected at the hospital, he was only found to have a few injuries. And so he had three bruises, one on his left hip, his right thigh and his jaw, as well as a bleeding laceration on the back of his head. And his death was determined to be caused by blunt force trauma to the head. Grant had no abrasions, like we talked about, no road rash that should have occurred I mean, like you said, with your son, like he got road rash from falling off his bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he also didn't have any burns. And he had just driven, what, 50 minutes or so to get to this facility in Gallatin from Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and he was parked a very short time. It was like they had just gotten there. And so then mm-hmm. he gets out of his truck to go get his shit, to go inside. It runs mm-hmm. over him. And there's not one burn on his body. His no. clothes are also pristine.
Yeah.
His body is actually pristine. There's the blood on the back of his head and like in and his like hair a little bit. And like a
bruise here and there. Yeah.
But he, Angie said when she went to the hospital and saw him, he looked like he just stepped out of the shower, essentially. You would think that his body being drugged by a vehicle and then pinned underneath it.
And he's wearing shorts and a t-shirt. It's not like he's wearing long sleeve shirt, long pants kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And the clothes would have been tattered.
Mm-hmm.
This is a, what, 4,000 pound vehicle?
Dragging him on asphalt and then over rocks.
Over rocks. The bottom of the truck is not torn up in any way from these rocks. And again, remember, it would have had to roll backwards, come down in, up, and then come
then
back
in.
Yeah. There's no damage mm-hmm. to the bottom of the truck. Nothing is torn or hit or bumped or anything. He has no burns on his body. There's only one of the rocks in this ditch has blood on it. One. And it's not under the truck either. It's next to the truck. Mm-hmm. It looks like somebody took that rock and bashed him in the back of the head.
And then just dropped it wherever they did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then put that truck on top of him because, again, it's the truck is just very clearly was driven into that ditch from the sidewalk direction, mm-hmm. not from up top.
Right.
None of these things make sense. He should have had broken bones. He should have had just so many things.
So many cuts, so many, I mean, possibly burns like that kind of. Yeah, exactly. Grant wore glasses and he really couldn't see without them at all, like not well. But his glasses were found down by the sidewalk. So it would have been odd for him to be at the top of the lot without them. And it didn't make sense why they would have flown off of him onto the sidewalk.
Because again, like the sidewalk is like down here and his head is up here under the truck. Those glasses mm-hmm. didn't fly off of his face and go down here. While he's still under the truck.
Under the truck, exactly.
Again, that says he's hit or mm-hmm. something down here.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he is hit with the truck.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's standing on the sidewalk. I don't know why he's on the sidewalk and not inside the building. But he's on the sidewalk and maybe, you know,
mm-hmm.
just none of it makes sense.
I know. No, I know. I know. On the Freedom for Gracie website managed by Angie, she wrote, quote, if his glasses are here, the obvious conclusion is that Grant was last standing here, not at the top of the parking lot. So police never checked Aaron's phone to confirm if he was truly working on an email on his phone at the scene like he said he was. And Grant's phone was seen at the scene, still intact. It was later returned to Angie by Aaron and the screen was shattered.
How'd that happen?
Exactly. Just the fact that Aaron has changed his story. You know, we talked about it, but where he was saying Aaron got his equipment. And
mm-hmm.
Angie also reported that someone at the sports complex told her that Grant didn't even have an appointment that day. So why were they there?
Why were they there? Yeah. And another thing about Grant at that time was he had been really sick. His lungs were in a bad way. He didn't want to go to this workout that day. He didn't feel up to it. He didn't feel like he was going to, because they were like working on and like, I guess, testing some of his like stats, like how fast he could pitch. And like, I don't know all the correct terms or whatever, but he didn't want to go. He didn't feel like he was in good enough shape. And his lungs were not at the capacity they should have been, right? So he didn't want to go. And he actually told Angie that morning, and there are confirmed text messages, and that's what I'm trying to find here because I saw it. There's a Medium article, but it had some of the text messages. So that morning, well, and even earlier, 2 days earlier, Angie had texted Aaron, "I do not think Grant needs to be working out until his lungs are more stable. My opinion is on the record. You're playing with fire." Aaron never responded to that. Then she texted him again several times. And Angie explained Grant didn't want Aaron to stay for his practice and preferred to just do it on his own. He still doesn't respond. So on Monday morning, Angie texted him again, "If you're up, Grant has a change of mind and doesn't want to die in Gallatin. One of us needs to be there. Will you? If not, I'll go and sit in the parking lot. Let me know ASAP." And he said, "I'll be there." So she said that that morning, Grant had said, "I don't want to do this workout." And he said, "I don't want to die in Gallatin."
That's so sad.
Yeah. And it's really chilling too, because he died in Gallatin. The implication of that, though, the way that kind of Angie told it was that it was because of his lungs and, you know, all of that. Like, he just didn't feel up to it that day. And she said too that, like, it doesn't make sense why Aaron was pushing so hard for him to go there that day to do this. Like, why it wouldn't have just gotten rescheduled? Because why would you want to kind of record all these stats or whatever when he's not 100%? Wouldn't you want to wait until he's 100%?
Because you're not going to get good stats then, right? I mean,
exactly. And, you know, there's all these different stories that Aaron has given. So at one point he says, you know, "I'm parked next to Grant. I'm working on my emails," like this, totally engrossed in my emails. "And then I look up and the truck is gone. And then I hear a loud noise and I look down and it's at the bottom and Grant's underneath it." At one point, he also says, "I'm working on my emails. I notice the truck is no longer next to me anymore. I get out of my car to look around to see what's going on." Like, sometimes he says he sees the truck rolling backwards. Sometimes he doesn't see the truck rolling backwards. Sometimes he hears the noise before he gets out of his truck. Sometimes he gets out of his truck and hears the noise. At some points he says Grant got in the parking lot first. He parked next to him because Grant was already parked. In another statement, he says they happened to catch up with each other on Vietnam Veterans Parkway in Goodlettsville. And then he says, and he uses the term literally, "I literally followed Grant from Goodlettsville over to WPI. Grant pulled into the parking lot first because I'm following the truck." But now they've been driving together for a period of time. He never says that initially.
Mm-mm.
That never made it into any of his statements. And it's interesting that he uses the word literally. Okay, if you and I we're going to the same place and we somehow end up on the same road, even though we're coming from two completely different places, and I tell somebody that, I just don't know that I would be like, "I literally was following her." Like, literally, I was driving directly behind her.
Right. That's literally weird to say that.
Yeah. Why do you need to use the word literally if that is in fact what happened? And I know people use literally, I use literally a lot, but that's a weird way to use it, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah, definitely.
And he also says at one point, just kind of these strange uses of words, but he also says at one point that, I don't remember exactly when this was, it might've been at Grant's, memorial service or something, but he says something like, "I was actually grieving," or something like that. Do you remember this? It was, he says something like, "And I was really grieving. I was grieving and I really was." Or
I think I do remember something like this.
Yeah, people thought I was grieving and I really was. And yeah. It's like, why do you feel the need to say that to,
like, who are you trying to convince?
Yes. Nobody's questioning whether or not you were grieving, but he knows that people don't think that he was, right? Or there's some rumors mm-hmm. or whatever, but it's just strange to be a parent of a child who's been tragically killed in an accident and be like, "No, I actually was upset. I actually was grieving."
Yeah, that is so bizarre.
Isn't it? Like, it just, I don't know. I don't know. According to one emergency room form, Grant was trying to stop his truck from rolling and it rolled over him. So he was trapped under the vehicle. Like, none of that goes together. Mm-mm. Like, how does he know that? Because in so many of the stories, it's like, oh, well, I saw the truck rolling backwards. I didn't know Grant was under it. I get out, you know, whatever. Or I look up and the truck is already gone. Now he's saying that Grant was trying to stop it.
Like, how does he end up underneath of it?
How does he end up underneath of it? And especially if in one of his stories, he's getting it out of the passenger side of the car, because everybody that knew Grant knew that he wasn't keeping that stuff in the open bed of the truck. And his truck did not have a cover on the back. There wasn't like a camper top on it. And then also, he doesn't sue Toyota for this malfunction that allowed the truck to roll backwards.
In fact, after this incident happened, after Grant's death, Aaron drove Grant's truck around.
For months.
For months, he drove it. And he somehow convinced an insurance claims adjuster that the vehicle was totaled even after he drove it for that long and that it needed to be scrapped. There was no, like we talked about earlier, there was no evidence of any damage, no obvious damage to the truck.
Nope.
For it to be totaled. Mm-hmm. But fortunately, Angie was able to get in contact with the scrapyard before the truck was scrapped and she claimed it.
They also, I think Angie had somebody like check.
Oh, yeah, truck. So she had forensic testing done.
Yeah, to see if the piece, I don't know what this piece was, but there's some kind of piece that would have had to have been malfunctioning.
For it to roll backwards onto him in park. For it to have rolled backwards
the way that it did. This was a 2015 Toyota Tacoma. It has one of the highest safety ratings of any truck on the market. It was new. It wasn't like it was a 1983, you know, vehicle that had been through a lot of stuff. I mean, it's only 5 years old at this point. And that that part was confirmed to not be broken or malfunctioning.
Well, and the Tacoma apparently had a safety feature that would not allow the engine to shut off if it was not in park. So it had to have been in park and that piece was not malfunctioning in any way. So there's just no way. Yeah. And Aaron claimed that Grant had forgotten to put the parking brake on, but independent researchers that tested the theory and they don't find it valid. And Angie also reported that when Grant's vehicle was in the ditch, it was in park with the engine off.
And I also read that the keys weren't even in the car when it was in the ditch.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
so how? How did it happen? Yeah. These like mystery trio of men, did they take the keys?
Yeah.
Like,
And Toyota, I have a Toyota Highlander. My husband has a Toyota Tundra.
What's your license plate number?
Okay, well, let's go. So, like, they're very safe vehicles. My husband works in the auto industry, and that's why we have these vehicles. They have very few problems. They don't end up in the shop all the time. It's one of the reasons we have them. And they're also very safe. And I know from having a Toyota that their safety features are almost to the point of annoying, you know, like, I hate to say that, but you know what I mean? Like, sometimes I'm like, okay, I got it. You know, like, whatever.
Yeah, I do that to my car too. I don't have a very, very safe Toyota, but I have a Honda CRV. And every once in a while, I'm like, okay, thank you. But like, I know that I have to put the brakes on. My gosh.
Yeah. But, and my car is newer than Grant's was, but.
Weird flex, Trella.
I mean, it's like very new. It's not new anymore, but
no, it's not.
When I put my car in park, the parking brake automatically turns on. I don't have to do that. I don't have a separate parking brake that I can even push necessarily. It just does it. So I'm not saying that the 2015 model did that, but I believe the Highlander and the Tacoma are on the same frame and because they're similar size. So it's like, that's their version, their truck version of this SUV, vice versa. The Tundra is on the same frame as their Sequoia. It's their bigger SUV. So like, I don't know. It's just, they've got so many safety features. They're rated very highly in safety. And then he didn't turn around and you'd think again that he would have sued Toyota.
Mm-hmm. if it was a malfunction or if there should have been a recall on it and there wasn't or whatever the case may be.
Exactly.
Because I mean, there is an actor. Gosh, what is his name? Why can't I think of his name right now? Is it Anton? Oh, I can't think of his last name. I feel so bad. I think he was maybe in an X-Men movie or something, but he was definitely in Along Came a Spider and Hearts in Atlantis. But Anton Yelkin, he had, if you see him, you might know who I'm talking about. But I think it was like 2017, 2016, maybe a little bit later than that. I don't remember exactly when, but he was like in his 20s and he had a Jeep. I don't know what kind of Jeep, but he had a Jeep and he put it in park and he was trying to open the gate to his house. And somehow, I don't know how, it was a recall that was on this Jeep, but it came out of park or something and it rolled into him and pinned him up against the fence and he passed away. And there's evidence to prove that this was a malfunction. It was a recall that they should, you know, it was in need of being fixed, or maybe they hadn't released the recall. I don't really know what happened, but I know that they admitted that it was some malfunction on the Jeep. So, right.
Yeah. And none of that is confirmed. And in fact, it's confirmed that there was no malfunction. Yeah, exactly. And he takes no steps, you know. And maybe he would say.
And for somebody who is that litigious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe he would say, well, you know, I've already got all this money. But it's not about money. Like, it's also like, if that really is what killed your child because of a malfunction.
Yeah, it should be about the principal. Like, we need to do something
and
to
make sure it doesn't happen to other people.
That's what I was going to say, to save other people from that fate.
And then, like, if you look at the inside of Grant's truck, everything that was in it is still perfectly in its place. Cups in the cup holder, all his baseball equipment was in the back seat. And it's all now, right where it would normally be. None of it is shifted around. None of it is knocked into the floor.
Jostled around about. Yeah, I mean, I am not a good driver, and I will admit it. I need to be better about it. But I just also am, I'm completely joking when I say this, but I am a woman, which means that I personally suck at driving. That's just who I am as a person. It's a complete joke, but still.
Me too, though.
I do personally suck at it. So I have in the past, maybe, you know, trying to change my radio station and kind of run off the road or something. And then my phone goes flying because I overcorrect, you know, mm-hmm. And my phone goes flying.
Or your purse. Yeah, my purse.
Something in the back seat. I had a bunch of watermelons in my back seat or in the back of my car for a while. I forgot to take them out. And they're just like rolling everywhere, you know, just from like turns and curves and stuff. So it just doesn't make any sense to me that. It's just like pristine. Like it had been placed, like picked up and placed there. Except for the bumper, which apparently if you look at it the wrong way, it's just going to come off. So
yeah. And that was like a known issue. The way they made it, it was just.
It's a common thing.
Yeah, it's a common thing. And it's also very strange that. God, all of it is so. I just don't understand how the police looked at this.
And they didn't even do a thorough investigation. They worked on it for like 57 minutes, something like that.
And they said, oh, tragic accident, bye. Sounds right to me.
Do any like recreating the scene, any investigation, but at all. They didn't look into anything with Aaron. They didn't check his phone like we talked about earlier. They just took him for his word. What I don't understand is how they were at the scene, how you can look at the scene and hear what his version, Aaron's version of it is, and be like, sounds about right.
Right.
People have been prosecuted and investigated for less.
Uh-huh. Or at the very least, like they never even took him down to the station to ask him any questions. They didn't like, that's protocol, I would think. You've got to get statements from people.
Try to track down those three guys that were there, you know, like.
And that was never done. There was never anything that's like, okay, we need to figure out who these guys were. They didn't ask around to anybody. They didn't do any of that stuff. And it took them 50 minutes to determine that this was, in fact, exactly what Aaron said, even though everything at the scene screamed that it wasn't. There should have been some evidence on the asphalt. The asphalt looked perfect. There should have been some evidence on Grant's body. His body looked relatively perfect. There's no broken bones. There's no burns. There's no nothing. There's no blood coming all the way down this parking lot. And the tire tracks run from they go this way. The tire tracks go over the sidewalk and into the ditch. There are no tracks coming down this way.
Right.
And Angie said that she had Life 360 on the app or on their phones, and it showed that Grant was, he wasn't at the top. He was down at the bottom on the sidewalk when he was struck.
Mm-hmm. And reportedly, Angie, Grace, and the rest of the family who loved Grant believe the following is what really happened that day. So they think that Grant was standing on the sidewalk by the road, like you talked about, as a possibility, when Aaron drove the Tacoma over the sidewalk, hitting Grant intentionally. Grant would have fallen back, striking his head on the rock, and Aaron pulled the truck over, up and over his son. And this would explain many of the inconsistencies found in Aaron's account.
Grant also, according to Angie, every time he got somewhere, and again, like the Grant was a youngin', right? Compared to us, I guess. So where we might send a text message to somebody when we arrive somewhere, the kiddos are snapping each other on Snapchat, right? So he without fail, every time he got somewhere, wherever he was going, he would snap her. And she never got anything that day. And if he gets there around 8:40, if he gets there around 8:40 and the practice wasn't supposed to start till 9, he would have had plenty of time to snap her. And supposedly, Aaron calls 911 at what, 8:43, 8:44?
Mm-hmm.
That's only a couple minutes. So why would he hurry up and get out of his car, get his gear, and get in there? Like, he would have done what he always does, which would be sit in his truck, snap his girlfriend, whatever, because he had plenty of time. It wasn't like he got there at 8:57 and he's got to get out of the rush truck immediately.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, I just don't understand why the police didn't, like, okay, these are the things that always happen, yeah, that he does. And we've heard this in missing persons reports and stuff too. Well, they ran away. They left on their own.
Well,
they've never done that before. And this is
evidence to support this.
Yeah, they've never run away. They've never talked about running away. And for holidays or for this or for that, they are always here. I always hear from them. I always this, I always that. They always do this. And like, they're just like, man, well, not this time. They just ran away. Can that happen? Sure, it can happen. But why can't we just look into it?
Exactly. Like, at the very, very, very least, out of all of this, because everything that we've talked about, the alleged abuse, the way that this crime scene went down, rather than just saying, okay, that didn't happen, or okay, this is how it happened, why don't we just look into it? Because that's your fucking job, and it's the least you could do.
Mm-hmm. In 50 minutes? That's pretty much enough time to fill out the paperwork. Like, you don't even have
ocular time. Pat down.
Absolutely. Just that you don't have enough time to do what needs to be done in mm-hmm. 50 minutes. If you're going to actually investigate, it would take that long just to get him down to the station and begin an interview process, which they never did.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it should have taken, from what I have heard from that podcast that we listened to about the two retired police officers, that they said it would something like that, 4 or 5 hours.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because you have to go through everything. Like, there's protocols that are involved, and it's not quick.
No. And the thing is, okay, so despite all of this, all of the alleged abuse by Aaron against Grant, Gracie, and Angie, the case remains closed and Aaron Solomon remains a free man. And on May 12th, 2021, 14-year-old Gracie posted a video she made on YouTube. It's 18 minutes long, but she talks about the sexual abuse she suffered from her father and how she doesn't even want to call him her dad anymore. One of Grant's friends posted a video supporting Gracie, explaining what she'd seen happen throughout the years. Aaron, of course, filed defamation lawsuits against Angie and a group of Gracie's friends, saying that all the allegations made in the videos were false. Grace Christian Academy denied knowing anything about the complaints of abuse. Now, since Grant's case has taken social media by storm, many of the people involved have made statements about their quote-unquote involvement, while others have actively avoided the topic. Steve Berger, the the founding pastor of Grace Chapel, said that the church, quote, fulfilled their reporting obligations. And this pastor, who has also reportedly preached in the past that sexual assault claims had to have at least two or three witnesses.
I feel like I know we've heard that somewhere else. Was it I watched the Hillsong documentary?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he say that too? That like it's got to have two or three witnesses or it just simply doesn't count?
When has that ever happened?
Yeah, when?
What crime has two or three witnesses?
Exactly.
Name one. I'll wait.
Yeah, exactly. Like what person is going to be like, I'm going to sexually assault you and let me bring three other people into this room so that this can be verified at a later date?
Yeah. Like, what? Maybe they could get it notified too, like a notary, you know?
Exactly.
Notarized, not notified, notarized. But anyway, Berger publicly exclaimed how he felt he was being, quote, canceled and had to close his Twitter account or X account. I don't know what you call it now.
Oh, right.
That's so sad for him.
So sorry.
When Tennessee Governor Bill Lee was asked publicly about whether he'd received any letters from people asking him to open an investigation into Grant Solomon's death and whether he planned on using his power as governor to investigate his death, Lee responded that all letters that like that would go through his safety department and they determine whether they need to get involved. And Lee said he trusted them to report back to him. So he's like, I don't know. Aaron Solomon is still living as a free man and reported to be still attending church with the governor and friends at Grace Chapel. Angie, Grace, and the rest of the world that have learned about Grant's death continue to fight for justice in a world that has so grossly failed them. And if you have any information about Grant's death or would like to learn more or support his cause, please go to freedom4gracie.com.
Mm-hmm. And there's also like a petition that you can sign for Grant's case to be reopened. It's justiceforgrant.com. There's Facebook and I think Instagram accounts. It's just...
this case is one hell of a case. And my feelings on the case, which I think that you possibly have the same feelings, but, or I know you do, but, you know, unsolved cases really aren't, they unsettle me because I would like closure. I would like everything to be like wrapped up and, you know, have the bow and it's like, okay, we're done here. Because they're just hard enough when they've been solved. It's just, it's so awful. This case to me, it makes me mad in so many ways, but I don't think that, to me, it's not unsolved because I know who did it. I guarantee I know who did it. Mm-hmm. What pisses me off is that nothing is being done about it. He's just living his life like normal. And he has been, I don't know. He's got either it's his cause or he supports it, but it's, it's something about children of sexual assault that he has posted about.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, which is like a slap in the fucking face. I think it's great to support these causes, but you are allegedly an abuser. And you're going to go around and see it's all about. And this is the thing, too. I don't know if it's only in the South, but that good old boy, you got your reputation. Can't taint that. Mm-mm. Everything's about that. So,
mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, like the Murdoch case,
it's all about the
name. It's all about the reputation. It's all about the presentation to the world. We've got it all together. We're a powerful family. We're going to stay a powerful family. Like, you know, right. And I think Aaron saying that day in the hospital, we're going to be a family now. He viewed Grant, allegedly, as the thing that was going to keep them from being a family because he was going to testify. And once he was an adult, he might actually be listened to.
Right.
You know, maybe, maybe not. But there's definitely motive there.
Oh, absolutely.
Because in his mind, Grant has always been the one who's been the protector and he stands up for it and, you know, for Gracie and for Angie and all these things. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's bigger than him now. I mean, you know,
and I mean, he's got some sort of pull being an adult now, or he thought he did. I don't, I, would have hoped had this come to fruition and Grant was able to testify against his dad. I would hope that it would be taken seriously, but what have we seen about this case up until this point? Not.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's just so frustrating.
So frustrating.
But that's the case, guys, up until this point. Now, who knows? Maybe something will happen where enough signatures are on the, I don't know. But
yeah. Yeah. Sign the petitions if you feel strongly about it. Donate where you can, or, just share it.
Sharing it. Yeah,
it makes a huge difference, getting more eyes and ears on it. So if it's something that you feel like, this is a child, Gracie's only 15 right now.
16?
Right?
Or
yeah,
15?
16, something like that. She's still a minor. She mm-hmm. needs help.
Yeah.
She needs help. So.
Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We love you, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening, and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud.
Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy.
Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.